Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Look, Mariners fans, I know you guys are all furious this morning. It is not fun being no hit. It's not fun seeing a game with zero offense. But hear me out. Jake Heaps here with you. Hear me out.
Hear me out.
You guys, okay. It's also rare that you get to see a generational talent on the mound. You know what I mean? And I know it's for the other team. But knowing that you watched Verlander and you saw him out there just throwing nasty stuff, it was... I'm so sorry, Jake. I actually was looking at the wrong name. It was a dude named Spencer Turnbull. Changes things. For a minute here, I thought we were talking about watching something. That is not good. I take it back, Mariners fans. You should be angry. You should absolutely be angry. My mistake, Jake. With that said, I guess, how do you fix it?
Stacey, you're too much for me. I was wondering where you were going to go with this thing. Turnbull. Look, this is something that here I have a hard time with, because on one end, yeah, you could come in today and be like, hey, perspective, people. Take a step back. Let's have some perspective on the issue. And perspective would tell you, look, is this frustrating? Is this frustrating to see the Mariners get no hit for the second time in the span of 14 days? Yeah, it is. But look, you can come in and say, it's all good. They're going to go through their growing pains. They're going to have ups and downs. What do you expect, right? This is a lineup that wasn't addressed in the offseason. You didn't spend extra money for... for this lineup. You didn't go out of your way. You're trying to see what you have in this farm system. You're trying to bring guys up, right, as you go along and let them develop and play this thing out. That's what this year is all about, Stacy. And hopefully at the end of it, we can be competitive, and it can be the mark and the sign that guys like Kelnick and Logan Gilbert and Cal Raleigh and whoever else, J.P. Crawford or whoever else, Kyle Lewis, that you deem is going to be a part of your team over the next multiple years of this rebuilding process and going in and contending and winning, that's all this matters. And you're going to go spend money the following year, and we're going to turn this thing into a legit winner as you continue to keep adding talent. That's perspective, okay? That's coming in with perspective, Stacey. Do you like that? Do you like that perspective? That's perspective.
Yeah, and I do, and it's healthy to have. And okay. I'm of two minds about it, which is why I really like the perspective and the step back. The step back is this team, like you said, has a lot to be excited about. You have a universally acclaimed farm system. It's not like something where some people say you're average, some people say you're good. You are almost universally either like 5-4-3 around there, right? In the prospects that you've got. And you've also got people unconnected to the organization who have no reason to make you feel better that feel really good about the future. Jeff Passan, cut number two, was on with Brock and Salk on their podcast on Tuesday, had to say this.
Not that the M's are there. There's a lot left to do, but it's a really, really good place to start. And when you see him and Logan Gilbert debuting the same day, when you know Julio Rodriguez and Cal Raleigh and Emerson Hitchcock are on their way as well, and George Kirby, I mean, there's just a lot of talent there right now. And not all of them are going to work out. Not all of them are going to be stars, but I think there's enough high-end talent there where even if a couple of them don't turn out to be what you were hoping for necessarily, it's still enough where if they go out and sign the right types of free agents, they're going to be in a fantastic position.
Now, not only is Passan saying, hey, you have so many good guys that even if they don't all work out, which they won't, let's be honest, you're still going to be good. You've also got Jim Callis, who was on with us the other day, saying that could happen even sooner than expected. Cut three.
I mean, I know they're 500, so, I mean, you know, quarter way through the season right now, kind of in the, theoretically, in the wild card race. I don't know if they're really a playoff team this year, but what I was going to say is you see it time and time again. When you have these teams that have really good farm systems, those teams often go back to contention even sooner than you'd expect. I mean, we saw it happen with the Astros before they won a World Series. We saw it with the Cubs. We saw it with the Brewers who made the National League Championship Series. We saw it with the Padres. And so sometimes, like, you know, we might look up. We might have a lot of these, you know, they're very good prospects will be in the big leagues next year, and maybe they contend next year. I mean, 23 is probably realistic. But like I said, I mean, when you have a farm system that's that talented, a lot of times your big league team improves even quicker than you might suspect.
Jake, the arrow is pointing up. Fans should be excited for the future. That's
right.
Not how I feel right now. Not how fans feel right now.
Yeah, exactly. From legitimate baseball minds, I feel great about that. I'm great to have perspective and sit back, but when it comes to the here and now, I don't want perspective. I don't want anybody to talk to me about perspective. I understand what perspective is. But when you get no-no'd it within the span of 14 days and you see this lineup struggling and they're on average, Stacey, hitting below 200, I'm sorry, but that's unacceptable. I don't care where you are in this rebuilding process. I don't care that you haven't spent money in the lineup. These are the guys that you decided to roll out there. And by the way, they're talented. This isn't a group that just doesn't have it. This is a talented group, and we've seen them, and they're going to go through their hot streaks, and they're going to go through some, you know, cold valleys, and we're going to see that. And that's going to be kind of the story of the season this year, Stacey. But when you get to these valleys, it's very, I think it's a very, you know, touchy subject when it comes to exactly how you go through this as a coaching staff, as you know, your Scott Service. How do you continue to keep motivating your guys and continue to keep their heads up and continue to keep building confidence along the way? But moments like this, these are moments where I want to see the skip get mad. These are moments where I want to see the standard being set. How do you build a winning culture, a winning team in the midst of a rebuild? Well, it's not just brushing things off. And, you know, here in cut number one with Scott Service, he said the right things, but I'm missing the tone.
Obviously, the story of the night is the no-hitter again, and it's disappointing. We have to get better. I know we have a young team, and some of this is growing pains, but, you know, there's a competitiveness that has to take over in ball games like that and making adjustments, and we're just not getting it done.
So, I mean, seriously, when you look at this, Scott Service isn't this, you know, yeller and screamer. So I don't want Scott Service to be any different than who he is. But I feel like these are the moments where you have to really make clear where the standard is and how you're building your team and where the standard of winning really lies. And there's a way to do it without ruining confidence. But I do think that this group needs to be, you know, have a little kick in the pants and say, look, I know we're young guys, but we got to be better. We got to be better than what this is right now. And so for me, I look at this and I think it's okay to understand the perspective and still be frustrated and upset with what's going on or what we witnessed last night.
And I also think it's okay if you're someone who's like, I'm not mad. Like, I'm not mad about it. Either you feel nothing because no one can hurt you anymore as a Mariners fan, or you just think, like, these are all young guys. This is Jared Kelnick's, like, first series, essentially. This is, or second series ever. You know, these are guys that are in their rookie year or are having their first full season. Like, it is not the end of the world, and it is okay if you as a fan aren't mad about it. What I would say is I'm kind of in between your mindset, if you're that fan, and where Jake is, where he's like, I need accountability. What's going on? Which is, I look at it as there is plenty of reason to be excited about the team of the future and plenty of reason to be concerned about the team in the lineup that's there now. Those things are not exclusive, though. There's a lot of overlap right now. There are guys in this lineup that are part of your core of the future. And so I know that you're waiting for them to get that experience, and you're going to allow some room for that. But that clock is ticking. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't just like, hey, let's give you 5 years to get your legs underneath you. Like, this is like, you got to start figuring it out. And getting no hit twice, like, it's almost hard to, it's almost impressive when you think about it, Jake. I mean, I think maybe this is something Mariners fans should feel good about.
You think so?
I mean, when you think about it, when's the last time this happened, DJ? Hey, was it like the Phillies or something?
Well, Cleveland just got has been no-hit twice
already.
They've
been no-hit twice, but no-hit within a span of like 12 or 14 days.
It was like the fifth time since 1900.
1900? I mean, though, it was a different world then. The Titanic hadn't even sunk yet. I mean, there's plenty of reason to think like you broke a 100-year-old record.
Here's what's bad. Here's what's bad. Here's what's bad about this is you teased to everybody that, okay, maybe if this was against Justin Verlander and that happened against the Orioles when it was Means, who is one of the best pitchers in baseball right now. He is very good. So it's understandable, right? It's just a matchup problem. But Spencer Turnbull, I'm sorry. And the Detroit Tigers, you're going to lose a series to the Detroit Tigers and DJ before Stacy came back on Monday, we were all talking, you, me, and Graz, how, hey, this is going to be a great opportunity for them to really get on track. Because why? The Detroit Tigers are garbage.
You were wrong.
So it is hard to sit there and try and have perspective when you put together all these things. Why? Why? Because the standard is higher than that, for sure. And this is a talented group. I think that this young group is talented, mm-hmm. and they're better than what they displayed, obviously, last night. They're better than what they displayed these last two games against the Detroit Tigers. I mean, how do you go from, you know, knocking out Shane Bieber in the sixth inning, fifth inning, you know, driving him up to 103 pitches, scoring three runs on him, to giving up a no-no to Spencer Turnbull? Young lineup. It's going to be ups and downs all the way through this process, but I think that when you're a fan and when you're watching this, I'm perfectly with you. I'm perfectly with you and totally understand being upset and being frustrated with what we're seeing, because you're witnessing history. Stacey, you just said history. They might break history in giving up
or getting a
third no-no. I mean, it's very likely at this point. I mean, we're in May. It's very likely. And what is this batting average going to end up turning out to be? Are they going to break their own record in terms of worst batting average this season? We'll see. I mean, it's going to have to be one heck of a turnaround from this entire lineup, because right now you have way too many spots on this roster or this lineup where you are looking at it going, it's an automatic out. I mean, I know when mm-hmm. Luis Torrens and Jose Marmolejos are paired together in that lineup, I can guarantee you there's two outs right there every single time in a given lineup.
I thought you literally just decided the other day that you were going to like Jose Marmolejos.
Well, I saw him and his wife. They did an amazing. They did. You know, the Mariners tweeted out. You know, they did a recent baby reveal.
Yeah.
Right. They're having their second kid, so congratulations to the Marmolejos family. It was very, very heartwarming. I loved it. And yes, for a brief moment, I was like, you know what? I'm going to put my anger to the side.
Yeah, support the dads.
I'm going to support, you know, all in. But then I saw him later that night. He didn't get a hit, and then it went right back. So that's kind of where I'm at.
He did
a
180.
Right now. Yes.
Yeah, it's, I guess, from that point, and I really liked that from you saying, like, I'm kind of taking it to where I'm assuming you're going, which is like, can we just make the floor a bit higher? You know what I mean? Like, you're in a rebuild,
yes.
And you're going to be bad. Like, you're going to struggle. You're going to have peaks and valleys, and you're going to have to navigate through that. Let's just have the floor not be two no-hitters in the span of 2 weeks. Like, if the floor could be slightly higher than that, a one-hitter, two, maybe. You know what I mean? Then that would a shutout. Like, that, like, just a slightly higher floor.
Yeah, I fully agree with you. And the 206 asks the important question, so what do they do? How do they fix this, right? And the easy thing is to point to the scapegoat in the situation, which is the hitting coach, which is Tim Lake. And you know, sometimes that happens. But I don't necessarily think that I'm out there saying that this has got to happen. He's got to go. What do they do? There's no real answer. There's nowhere for any of these young players to hide. Because you didn't go out and acquire veteran guys. And the only place that you can go into is to dip into, you know, AAA, go and dip in. Okay, I'm going to bring up Taylor Trammell. Well, we don't know if he's fixed yet. We don't know if he's ready to come back to the big league level, right? There's not really anywhere to hide. There's not really any real solution to the problem in the situation that you're in other than these guys got to figure it out, and they've got to work through it, and eventually they've got to be able to come out of this thing and start hitting again and being more consistent. I wish I had a better answer for you, 206, but that's really where we're at.
Why don't you have the answers, Jake, of how to fix this?
I wish I did. I wish I could walk right into Scott Service's lineup, and I know it. I know how to fix this team like, boy, Howdy did with Mike Zunino for a period of time.
Howdy for the catchers, for all the catchers?
Well, yeah, we could try and figure this out. I mean, still, Howdy,
they call Zunino him the catcher guru.
Zunino was hitting around 200 still,
it's
above 199.
It's above 175. All right. This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. He is Jake Heaps. I'm Stacey Ross. DJ Wilder on the board. And speaking of DJ, it's 11:15. That means it's time for your three questions, brought to you by Tila Mortgage.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
What's the dumbest question you could ask? What?
Before I get to question one, I just want to read this text from the Mac and Jack's text line. 1900, Stacey was a young kid growing up at that time.
Wow. Okay. Well, Stacey, now I know who to block from the text line. Congratulations, 206.
How much was candy bars back then?
Please go to question one, DJ.
Penny, nickel?
We don't have time for this.
Did gas even exist back then?
We're against the clock here.
I don't know. I mean, maybe it was a prohibition. We're not sure.
Hilarious.
All right, question one. The real question one. Even though he still can't hit, would you rather have Mike Zunino or Luis Torrens right now?
Zunino. What? Yes.
Yeah, bring him back, please. I mean, please, at this point. And I would even take Zunino at his worst right now over Luis Torrens. At least he can play really good defense. At least we could have that. I mean, Torrens, to me, it's just been unfortunate because, when he came in, ironically enough, from the Padres, he was a guy that everybody was touting as somebody that could hit. He might not be the greatest, defensive catcher, which we have come to see, but the guy can hit. And right now, that is nowhere to be true. So we'll see if he can figure it out. But, I mean, right now he can't even hit a fastball down the middle of the plate. So as I've said before, the countdown to Cal Raleigh, I have it, and I'm visualizing it. I don't want him called up any sooner, but I cannot wait for the day that Cal Raleigh is up with the Mariners.
I'd be very okay with him being there right now. I think I'd be very okay with it. You're not going to get worse.
But don't rush it.
You cannot get worse.
Don't rush it. I don't want Cal Raleigh up there before he is ready. I can't wait to see that beautiful switch-hitting swing at the big league level. But I cannot wait for that day to come, because what we are witnessing behind the plate right now is rough.
I'll take Zunino for my own sanity and for the sanity of Mariners fans. I'd love for Torrens, for frankly Taylor Trammell and Ty France to work out, because I want to feel that San Diego trade was a great one.
Number two.
Oh, I also wanted to give a shout out to our own Brent Stecker for saying, hey, Luis Torrens had his best block of the season last night. Too bad it was on a play at home, where he actually has to catch the ball. But anyways.
Yeah. Yes.
Good job, Brent.
Anyways, thank you, Brent.
Yes.
Good job.
Question two. What are some fair expectations for Logan Gilbert tonight as he makes just his second major league start?
No hitter.
Okay, yeah, sure.
We're due on the other side.
Yeah, okay, yeah, sure. We'll let the young kid in the second start. That's where the bar will be set. No, for me, what I'm going to be looking at for Logan Gilbert is improvement. Look, can he locate his fastball better? Can he get himself out of dangerous situations a little bit more often? You saw in the third and fourth inning in his first start, really start to have great command and really started to get batters chasing and strikeouts. And so I'm looking for Logan Gilbert to come out and have a little bit more consistency, protect himself a little bit with some of his pitches in terms of, not giving up meatballs that are taken the other way for home runs. So I think for Logan Gilbert tonight, just really working on that location with his fastball and with his off-speed stuff, that to me is the improvement that I would love to see, because I'm really excited about this kid. I think he's got the mental makeup, the talent. He's got it all. It's just, getting used to throwing to big league hitters and seeing how those guys respond.
I think you'd like to see him get just a bit deeper into the game, too. You don't even have to get through, five or six. Just get to, maybe five.
Yeah, I think they have him on a pitch count, Stacey, where I think they're limiting him to the Fifth inning is the deepest that they want him going right now, to my understanding.
Which is
maybe
fine
I'm wrong
for
on
me,
that,
but that would be, which yeah. is completely okay. But that would still be a little better than his last outing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Number three.
I had this question yesterday, but we didn't have time for it, but it's still up to date because Shohei Ohtani hit another home run last night, extending his major league lead in home runs. And by the way, he also has like a 2.10 ERA tied with Max Scherzer, who's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball.
Created player.
Will we see more players like him of the two-way variety, or is Shohei Ohtani a one-of-one?
One-of-one.
I mean, easy one-of-one, Stacey, yeah. right? Like... There's gonna be nobody like this, and I don't think you're just gonna breed these types of players. I mean, Shohei Ohtani, he's seeing Mike Trout, what he's gone through, the black hole that is the Angels, and just makes you wish, you know, Ohtani, if you just would have made the right call and come up with the Mariners, it would be.
A totally different situation where he'd
no, it wouldn't be totally
in third
different.
Instead of fourth,
maybe
in the
we'd be hitting 205 as a total batting average.
Yeah,
but
at least I think maybe
man,
get to 215.
Man, we would be having a lot of fun watching this guy play. I mean, this guy is absolutely incredible. What a star! It is amazing. I can't wait to watch the Ohtani highlights every time that he's up to bat or whether he's on the mound. It's incredible, dominant stuff.
Yeah. It is, first of all, yes, one of one for sure. It's the reason people love watching him. He's a rare talent. He hit his 14th home run the other day, ironically off of Plesic, right, who almost no-hit the Mariners. So, small world. But it is one of those weird things. I know that I ended our first segment yesterday, and I'm doing it again, talking about the Angels, having two, not just of the best players in baseball, two of the best players, certainly one of them ever in baseball, and just kind of getting nowhere with it. And it leads to, and I've said this before, one of my all-time favorite sports conversations, guys whose talent was not wasted, but kind of wasted with one team, and they never got anywhere. Like,
yeah.
You might have one of the best players to ever pick up a bat that appears in, like, what, a single playoff series?
Yeah, like, it would be an absolute shame. It would be an absolute shame for the game, and that's the way it looks right now. I mean, it really does, and I was kind of shocked to see Mike Trout sign that mega deal with the Angels. But
Seems like a loyal guy, though. Like, I think that he probably thinks we can do this.
Well, that's a nice thought there, Mike Trout. But you're a better baseball player than you are, you know, actually looking at the predictions of what can happen in the future, because I don't see the Angels making the playoffs or being a legit playoff team for quite some time.
All right, Brandon Gustafson is going to join us at noon. We talked about having peaks and valleys for this team, and he's going to explain why we might see that from younger teams and when we can hopefully start seeing more peaks and less valleys from the Mariners. We've also got Joe Fan, who's going to join us at 1 p.m. He's been at OTAs, at rookie camp, and he'll have all his observations from that, from this Seahawks team when he joins us then. Before we get to any of that, though, we're going to get back to this no-no with Mike Salk next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Mike Salk joining us now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, it is weird that we watched kind of a generational talent on the mound yesterday against the Mariners. And I know that getting no hit isn't fun, but man, was it great to see. I think I'm reading this. Spencer Turnbull? I think I'm reading that right. I'm not entirely sure, but man, one in a million kind of pitcher.
Yeah, anytime you get a guy like that on the mound,
you kind of know what's coming.
Yeah, that's a tough night, man. That's not a guy you want to get no hit by, that's for sure. And you know, obviously challenging to watch, listen to, be a part of, play, et cetera. I mean, you know, no one's going to try to justify a second no-hitter in the span of 13 days, especially to a guy like that. But, you know, how do I handle it? I kind of look at it and say, well, rebuilds are messy. They're non-linear. Winning is not necessarily the goal in 2021. The goal is for some of these young guys to play, to learn, to develop, to get better. And hopefully that's what's happening here. I mean, you know, was Jared Kelnick the bright spot yesterday? I guess. He got on base, stole a bag, you know, hustled down to first base to avoid being the last out of the game. I mean, you try to look for some of those positives. It's obviously tough on a day like today, but, you know, I found myself thinking about it last night and going back to the Astros before they got to, you know, their 100-win season. And there were some of these types of seasons where they were 15th in the American League in batting average and slugging percentage and ERA, et cetera, even though they had some of their future stars already up with the team. Springer and Altuve and Keuchel and guys were up while they were still struggling and, in fact, were outright bad. It wasn't until they went out and eventually brought in, you know, those guys grew up. They brought in some more players from their farm system and then spent some money in free agency that they eventually had that 100-win season. So, you know, the hope is that this is just a step along the way in the process.
You know, Salk, you know, we talked about in the beginning of our show about having perspective and being able to look at it that way versus, you know, being able to zero in on what's going on now and being frustrated and being, you know, upset about the lack of hitting and hitting below, you know, 200 on an average and, you know, all these things that you look at and you're just like, man, this is rough. How do you manage that if you're Scott Service? You know, there's a part of me that feels like it's obviously a very touch and go situation where you don't want to overdo it. You don't want to ruin guys' confidence, but you also have to set a standard. You have to set a standard and you have to be very clear about that as you're trying to build a winning culture.
Well, I think if you're Scott, you're paying attention to the process more than the results, right? Why were you no hit? Was it because you swung and missed? Or was it because you swung at the wrong pitch, right? What was your approach going into every at-bat? Why were they not able to take more pitches and get to a really soft Detroit bullpen either of the last couple of nights? I think of your Service, the results are going to come eventually if you just stay focused on the process, and I would think that's exactly what he does. If the guys are having good at-bats that unfortunately aren't ending in hits, so be it. If the at-bats are the problem and the approach is the problem, well, then that's something that coaching and managerial work can actually try to work on.
You had Jeff Passan on the Brock and Salk podcast this week, and he had really good things to say about the organization moving forward. But what did you make of his comment that he would probably spend next offseason after 22 as opposed to this upcoming offseason?
Well, I think once we sort of dug into it, you know, he agreed that at least for now, that doesn't mean you're not going out and spending some this offseason. And with all of those shortstops on the market, right, and we've talked about them, Seager and Baez and Story and Correa, all four guys are going to be on the market as free agents this year now that Lindor signed with the Mets. So, you know, I don't think Jeff is saying not to start spending now. I think what he's saying is that maybe you don't go all the way in with all of your needs, where you've got to come up with a probably big-time infielder and a starting pitcher or two and a reliever. There's a lot of money to be spent if you're the Mariners. I don't think he's saying not to spend it yet, just that you don't have to spend all of it yet.
What if they don't? Like, what if they don't spend this offseason? What if they don't? You've been saying every single time we've talked about this, and I completely agree with you. I think you're right. They should be in the conversation for one of those shortstops. And I think everyone's like, well, look, it's not going to be Corey Seager, let's be honest. Or like, everyone thinks that different guys are more likely than others, but they should be in the conversation. What if they're not?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be a problem. I'm not ready to start have that kind of a what-if conversation today, Stacey, because, you know, I think they deserve somewhat of, well, maybe they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt just sort of given the last 20 years, but all indications are that they have followed this rebuild and have had a plan in place, which they've been incredibly open about from the beginning, right? Trade the high-priced veterans, cut down the salary, even more importantly, build up the farm system. Why do you deal Cano? Yeah, for financial flexibility, but even more importantly, to get back the kind of player you got in Kelnick, bring up these next few waves of developed players. And John has said specifically that the money saved would be invested back into the product when it was time to win. I guess you could make the argument after this year that maybe the winning time isn't now, that they're still another year away. But with that kind of talent available in free agency and that number of players at that premier position that you have a specific need at, it's really hard for me to imagine they won't be players there.
Salk, you know, we look at the no-no that was eventually occurred there versus the Detroit Tigers. But what did you see from Justin Dunn last night, and how do you feel about his progress at the moment?
Yeah, I see that he's got some of that swing and miss stuff, right, which is really valuable, and especially in today's modern game of baseball where strikeouts are king. I do have the concerns just about his nibbling, right? You know, the walks, he still, you know, last night pitches into the sixth, but wasn't able to get through six. And that's going to be the next step for him is can he get deeper into games by trusting the stuff, going after hitters and staying within the strike zone. If he can get there, I think Justin Dunn can absolutely be a back of your rotation starter. If not, then he's probably going to end up as a potentially high-impact reliever down the road. But I think we're a long way away from figuring that out. I liked what I saw. I'd love to see all the swings and misses. Would love to see him find a way to keep getting deeper into games.
All right. He is Mike Salk, joins us every single weekday at 11:30. Thanks, Mike.
All right, guys. See ya.
All right, there's a really cool stat that we saw yesterday about how the Braves have built their team. And it's fair to ask, because it's possible, why aren't the Mariners doing the same thing? I think I have an idea. That's next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
DJ, you found something really cool, and it was from Jason Churchill, friend of the show, who joined Jake and Groz on, was it Monday? He joined you guys to talk about this team, and he had something really cool, a thread, early this morning about team building. DJ, you found it. What stood out to you? What did it say?
Jake and I was able to find this thread, and it's so interesting because he gives this example, because we've talked about the Mariners haven't really spent money, especially this last offseason. They didn't really spend money to really provide any stopgaps or anybody like that. But he looked at someone like the Braves. The Braves did this where it wasn't like a money ball approach, but they were signing guys like R.A. Diggity's short contracts, like Drew Smiley, Charlie Morton, Cole Hamels, and then the big deals, you know, of course, came with Nick Markakis and Marcell Ozuna. And he also looked at the White Sox. Right now, the White Sox are the best record in all of baseball. Their biggest contract right now is a catcher by the name of Yasmani Grandal, and nothing against Yasmani Grandal. He's not the biggest name when you look at that team. You know, it's Jose Abreu, Eloy Jimenez, you know, Tim Anderson, all those guys, Nick Madrigal. And it's just interesting to see, like, the Mariners, as much as we trust this rebuild, they're really doing it differently, and we don't necessarily agree with it just because, like, at least these teams understood, like, maybe these guys couldn't be just stopgaps. They could be actual cogs in the machine of at the end of this rebuild, like actual good parts of this team. And the Mariners haven't really shown that they're willing to even do just that. They're relying on a lot of young, unproven players, putting them in roles that maybe they shouldn't be in. And it's not trying to say anything bad about someone like Dylan Moore. He's not an everyday player. He's just not. He's a utility guy, for example.
Well, ideally, the majority of your lineup wouldn't have negative WAR. Like just in a perfect world, you're limiting the at-bats that those guys are getting in general. Not because every team doesn't have a couple guys like that, but because ideally your full lineup won't be made up of guys with that stat. What I really like about it is what any fan in a market like Seattle, in a market like San Diego, wants to hear is that you don't have to spend like the Dodgers to build. The Padres actually have spent quite a bit. They're taking a really unique approach, which makes them a fun team to watch, and props to them above the Dodgers right now in the standings. And you don't have to take that approach is what Churchill's pointing to. Also, you can take the approach that Chicago and Atlanta have taken where you aren't spending like the biggest teams, you're spending smartly. And that also involves hitting on a lot of these deals, right? That these are successful deals. It's not like the Mariners haven't spent before, they just haven't done so effectively.
Right.
What I think, though, that their lack of success for 20 years has put them in is I don't know that that's an option for you. Like, I don't know that it is going to be an easy feat for Jerry DePoto to go out and try to get guys to sign to team-friendly contracts or short-term contracts or contracts where there is a benefit more leaning toward the team. Because what incentive do you have outside of money? Like, when you go to compete for a guy's services who's a free agent, the best thing you can do is throw money at him when you're the Mariners. You can't go out and say, look, we're a couple pieces away from a World Series team. People don't know what you have. Your best part of your team that you can pitch is your farm system. They haven't seen that. No one's seen that. And I'm really excited about it. Scouts are really excited about it. We're all excited about it. But if I'm signing a deal with you and giving you a couple years of my career to play for you, I need to see more. And I think for the Mariners, that's going to have to be money.
Well, and I think that's fair. And yeah, they might have to. And they're going to have to be willing to do it. That's just the reality of the situation. And in 2021, they're at a point in time where this organization, I think there's a lot of pressure on them to come through and follow through on that they will go out and spend money. I would be very surprised to not see them do that and not see them start adding pieces that can help along with this rebuilding process. But this is a perfect example this year. If you're Scott Servais, and going back, referencing back to Ryan Divish and his report about a month ago, talking about where all the conversation was in the offseason, Jerry DePoto and Scott Servais wanted to go out and spend some money on some quality stopgap players. And Kevin Mather, who was the president at the time, basically kind of said no. Like, we don't want to do that and talk to ownership that, hey, that's not what we want to do. We want to go through another year where we're going to save money on our payroll. We're going to learn more about our young guys, and then we're going to go from there. And if we feel good about where we're at the end of the season, then we'll start to spend money. Mm-hmm. But the thing I would caution them against that is, okay, well, what if Kelnick hits around 202? What if he hits around 205 like Mike Trout did, right, in his rookie season? What if that doesn't mean that you shouldn't go out and spend big money heading into the following year, because then Mike Trout goes on and hits 300 and starts to become a great player? I think you have to have the plan that this group is ready to move forward and ready to learn from the mistake of what happened this last year and really start building something and start building with good quality veteran help along the way as you allow your young guys to come up and allow them to be able to come up at the not only at the right time, Stacey, but also be able to do it in a way where not the world of pressure is on them to succeed in order for this team to be successful for that particular season. It's tough to be in that situation. And as we're seeing right now, there is zero. There is nowhere to hide for any of these young guys on this roster. They're all counting on them to perform and to step up. Dylan Moore, DJ, you said he's not an everyday player. I don't disagree with that. I think he's a very good utility guy and can be a great utility guy. But right now, there's nowhere for him to hide on this roster. He has to be an everyday type of player right now, and I think that puts you in a really tough spot.
What did you think about Mike Salk saying, what if they spend next year, but that the real turn is the year after? Because I think when he said that, it hit me that I've been a little ignorant about the pushback that COVID had on this team. Like, in my mind, I was like, you still got a short season and you're still going to go out and spend. And I don't think, and it sounds close-minded and stupid, I don't think I was realistic enough about the serious lack of at-bats that these young guys are getting and how that will have pushed back that timeline. I think fans are just so eager to see a change.
There's no doubt about that. I mean, that's why we're in the six-man rotation situation. It is because of the effect of what COVID has had on the development of a bunch of these guys, right? And so that's one of the major reasons for that. I do think that when you look at Kyle Lewis, you look at Evan White, for example, these guys haven't even had, when you talk about major league at-bats, they have not had a full season yet of major league at-bats. And that is incredible to think about. Sometimes we don't remember that, or we don't put that into our brain. So there still is a lot of development, and there's still a big process and a learning curve for this lineup. But I do believe that DJ, as you pointed out from this, you know, this thread that we saw from, you know, Jason Churchill on Twitter last night, you know, walking through and talking through this process, that is going to be the next question. And the big question is, how do you go from learning, developing, and growing and feeling the highs and the lows of this season, the massive highs and the massive lows, and yet come out on the other side of that willing to spend and willing to spend it in the right way to where you can continue to keep building a legit contender and not just blow your cash trying to get the next Corey Seager. You might do that. You might be willing to do that. But I don't think that that's necessarily going to be the answer to all of your problems, at least at this stage in time.
Well, and Churchill made a point there with the Braves. We're not. There's some texters that are saying, well, the last time that you paid Cano $240 million, it was a bust. That's not what we're saying. We're not saying spend that much money. Again, like Osuna is only making $65 million total. It's spent smartly. They're 13th in total payroll. And you can argue the Braves are the second best team in the National League. Yeah. They might make it to the World Series. They could win the whole dang thing. They're 13th in payroll.
And there's a big gap between where the Mariners are and even where Atlanta is. So it's not even, like, to even get to that point, you'd still be making a big jump. Can I throw in, because we have to go, can I throw in one final thing here that's only semi-related? But it's a sentiment that I've seen from a lot of people before when we've talked about this team. The 253 says, sorry, but there is no economic incentive for the Seattle Mariners owners to go out and spend a bunch of money to be competitive. The Mariners will always be mediocre as long as fans continue to attend games and are happy with a mediocre team. First of all, fans aren't happy with a mediocre team, clearly. And I've heard this sentiment before, and at times I've kind of felt it, right? At times I've felt like, get out there, get mad, be angry. But I'm sorry, Seattle fans have very recently, when you think about it, experienced a team relocation, a team that meant everything to people that was relocated. And I think that Seattle fans appreciate sports and in a way that fans in other cities don't. And because of that, they give people either long leashes or they'll show up just to have, you know, the team to watch. And look, it sounds like I'm rambling. What I'm saying is you need context when you make that kind of comment. The idea of, well, don't show up then. We've seen what happens. I think Seattle fans are keenly aware of what their fandom means to a team and also sometimes are like distrusting of ownership in a weird way. And I think that you need to find a happy medium between show up and watch them. Why wouldn't you want to show up and watch guys that could end up being great? You could see Jared Kelnick as a rookie. I mean, that's such a cool opportunity. But you also got to find a happy medium to put pressure on a team that doesn't involve just like, yeah, I'm not going to go at all. I think you're overlooking how hurt a lot of fans still are in general. All right. We are going to have, speaking of the Mariners, again, speaking of those peaks and valleys, Brandon Gustafson, who writes amazing baseball coverage for us on 710sports.com, joining us next.